issues of fasting, and that's when the Mishnah Berurah writes at the end of Tav Reish Yud Ches that this is one of the issues that a Rav has to have on his fingertips. It says, then when it comes to halachas of cholim and yom kippur, so these have to be, person has to be well versed. Mi be'erev yom kippur, ready erev yom kippur, the kind of thing you rabbi sechazer every year. Ki yuchal liyos de b'shios ma'ad yesh b'zakonis nefashos, because it could be that with a slight delay, so a certain person could be endangered. Ve'imu she'elo she'amar v'tzerach la'ayin hadin. If the Rav has to look into it, but there's somebody present who knows the halacha clearly, so in this case, we're not chilek b'zeh kovei l'rav. It's a chiddush all the way around, I think. The Mishnah Berurah sounds like that there are times when it's rakert, that it's a little bit of a chiddush, that if a Rav doesn't know the din, and somebody else knows the din, out of kovei l'rav, he can hold off and paskin himself, or hold off and ba'ayin. It's interesting. So ba'ayin od medina melu, and he has similar halachos when it comes to Shabbos. We discuss it at different times. So this is a parsha that a person has to be well versed in. Hopefully, all the shalos come before Yom Kippur. I was able to do research and discuss the issue with doctors, and discuss the issue with obviously with the cholim themselves, and work out various protocols. The halacha lamasa, we work with the information that the doctors provide for us. Some rabbanim have a preference for doctors that are shomrei Torah mitzvahs and appreciate the severity of the tzom. And there's what to be said for that. Sometimes doctors that are shomrei Torah mitzvahs, sometimes in a good way, because they know if the tolerance of pikuach nefesh doicha, they sometimes might be give more of an opinion and information. And in general, when one gets the information, whether it's from a shomrei Torah mitzvahs doctor or a doctor is not observant, or a doctor is not Jewish. So one's really asking questions about whether the fast, whether medically speaking, the fast will cause a person to be in any kind of sakonis nefashos, anything which is remotely life-threatening. If a person is in a compromised situation, so we're asking whether whether his situation will be worsened by the fast. So the information we're getting should be medical information, and then the Rav has to process it. But I want to first speak about an issue of Muberis. That's probably the issue which is most discussed amongst Rabbanim, and the issue which is probably most sensitive, and one of the issues where Rabbanim have come under a lot of pressure. The Shulchan Aruch is very clear that a muberes, that a woman who's pregnant, does have to fast. Shulchan Aruch is very clear that when it comes to the Arba Taniyos, except for Tisha B'Av, so the din of a muberes is that there's a minhag that she fasts. When it comes to Tisha B'Av, the son of Nidcha, that din of Rabbanim, she has to fast. And Shulchan Aruch is clear that when it comes to Yom Kippur, a muberes has to be mashlim, has to fast. That's the way the halacha was. Mizmana from Sinai, that's why it's recorded in the Mishnah. That's what's recorded in Rambam Shulchan Aruch. There was several years ago one of the Gdeli Yerushalayim, Rav Yaakov Yisrael Fisher, one of the very very much loved poskim of Yerushalayim, one of the poskim of the Bedatz. Your parents may have asked Shilas of Rav Yaakov Fisher. He had a slot where between, I think, 1 and 2 every day he would paskin shilas, For many years, he took the shilas in the Beis Hayra, and then later on in his life, he took shilas from his own home. His svarim are his many svarim called Eben Yisrael, and I believe he's the older brother of Shlomo Fisher, who is one of the Gedolei Olam presently. But Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Fisher was very much a Yerushalmi in his entire tzura and the way he paskin. And again, he was very much loved. He was known to be, maybe a makel is not the right word, but I remember that when I was, I had the schus of being mishamish for a period of time with Sholem Eisen. So Sholem Eisen had the slot from 10 to 12. So, and right before him was, I think, Rav Rosenthal, who was much younger at that time. And then the slot, either right after him or an hour later, was Rav Yaakov Yisrael Fisher. So Rav Eisen would tell me that he knows that he's, that amongst his, the poskim, he was more machmir on the Hefsik Taron on the first day. He was more makel on the latter days. So he told me that he knows that women often, if it's the first day, shalom, will ask another Rav. So he said, and if they really want, they'll line up for Rav Yaakov Yisrael Fisher. He had a long line. Because he was known to be more makel than the other. They said Rav Rosenthal was known to be much more machmir, so they wouldn't line up for him. So Rav Yaakov Yisrael Fisher, in a haskama that he wrote to a sefer, there's a sefer that you're all familiar with. You're all familiar with the Art Scroll Book on Avelus. So that is the translation of the Makor Baruch, right?
Pnei Baruch.
So the Pnei Baruch first came out in, obviously in Hebrew, and it came out in two volumes. The first is a very thin volume on Bikur Cholim and on Ninus, which I always thought was not a cheerful looking at Mr. Bikur Cholim. I would have done it differently. I would have put Bikur Cholim separately and Ninus with Avelus. But for every reason, his publisher decided to put on Ninus with Bikur Cholim and then Avelus in a separate sefer. So in the first volume, the Avelus, the Bikur Cholim and Ninus sefer, it's a very thin sefer, but very detailed. So he received a haskama, presumably to the set, from Yaakov Yisrael Fisher. And there, Fisher gave the haskama, and there he records that he thinks that the Kiyoyim Azeh, Shenech L'Shu Adoreis, that the people are weaker than they used to be. V'asaros Rabbon Shol Noshim Apil Sedei Atanas, and scores of women lose their pregnancies because of the fast. Tzvichin Kol Anoshim HaMulvoreis, all women who are pregnant, Ano Chedesh Shvi, until the ninth month, they have to eat Yom Kippur, Pochis Mikishir. So again, this is it was a revolutionary halachic bomb that he dropped in a very unsuspecting place in Haskoma to a sefer, and it was not a well developed shuv in the way it was presented, and again would have come from anybody less than Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Fisher. So Rabbi Yaakov Fisher, it would have been ignored, but since it came from Yaakov Fisher, some people did take note of it, and they took note, and obviously it was from my research was very heavily criticized and distanced. From the Rabbi Bleich has written on it extensively, indicating that it's a very difficult position and in a position that is not at all accepted. And Rav Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer, wrote a tshuva also where he resoundingly criticized the position and said it cannot be followed. I recently asked a friend who's a Rav in Eretz Yisrael and asked, "Is anybody what happened to this position?" And he thought that that halacha l'maisa nowadays, Rabbi Fisher's position is not really taken at all seriously by poskim. The response of the Tzitz Eliezer is very instructive, however, and the first and he responds first of all to Rav Fisher's information. He says he thinks his information is faulty. He thinks that the numbers of women who would lose who have a miscarriage as a result of a fast is a very, very, very small minority. He said, even if Rav Fisher's numbers are correct, that he scores of women, so Asarot Rabot, he said, well, that's scores of women over an entire career. That's not scores of women in any given year. So he says, even if it would be scores of women over the many years that Rav Fisher was paskening, or even if he was getting data from all the different dayanim in the bedats, it still would be a very unimpressive number. And he thought it would not come to the bar of being a sofek sakonas nefashos. So again, he both questions whether Rav Fisher's information is at all accurate, and if it is all accurate, is it still significant in terms of the way halacha looks at it? And Rav Oldenburg says, even if his information, his data was reasonable, it's still the kind of thing when you have, when a person is making a claim that a halacha that comes, that is so clearly recorded in Mishnayos and in Rambam and Shulchan Aruch, and there's absolutely no dissent, and we want to claim that Nishtanu Atvoim, that times have changed, that nature has changed. So he says that's the kind of thing that one brings to Rabbanim. It's not the kind of thing that you write in an Haskoma to a Sefer. It's not the way Halacha works. Halacha works. You sit down with Rabbanim and you say, this is the information, and let's come to a decision if you're going to claim such an important thing has happened. Rav Oldenburg also questions the data of Rav Fisher, because he says that even if Rav Fisher's information is correct, well, maybe if those women would have asked the Shaila, maybe the Rav would have told them not to fast. Because we don't tell, the Shulchan Aruch does not say every pregnant woman fast. Every pregnant woman who has a perfectly healthy pregnancy and who doesn't have, hasn't encountered any difficulty, should fast. But there are women who will discuss it, that will ask a Shaila, and the Rav will tell them they shouldn't fast. So Rav Oldenburg says that even if your information, even if your numbers are correct, so maybe you're including people that would have never been told to fast. We do have a little bit of data on this situation. Many years ago, this goes back to the early 80s, that's how old the information is, that there was a study done in Shaarei Tzedek. It was did not make it to the top journals, did not make it to the New England Journal of Medicine, which is the top journal. And the information that we have did not even make it to the Lancet, which is the British journal, which is not as... It made it to a... I think it was to an American journal, that got data from the Shaarei Tzedek Motzei Yom Kippur delivery room. And it did show an increase in women who already reached term in going into labor. Right? So some doctors say, oh, you see that there is a relation between fasting and going to labor. So Rabbi Blech correctly points out, no, you see a relation between a woman who's hit full term, who's in their ninth month, going into labor because of the fast. Yeah, there is an increase. Yeah, but that's but you don't see an increase in Hapolus. If I remember correctly, and I'm not sure if I do it very correctly, there was an increase in eighth month in some preterm deliveries, which is very, very concerning. Any time that a pregnancy ends earlier than the 39th, 40th week is... there's reason to be concerned, and certainly if it's earlier than and the doctors are very comfortable with that, but if it's earlier than the 37th week, then doctors are concerned about that. So that does raise a chashash. I don't think Rabbi Blech, I'm not sure if that what I'm saying is accurate, whether it because where we've left is not recorded. There was another journal that recorded the possibility of chemical changes during one day fasting, but with no conclusion. In other words, every person who fasts goes into certain chemical changes because of the lack of nutrients for a day. So that was noted with the pregnancy as well. Now, does a lack of one-day nutrients impact the fetus? So that obviously was not, I don't think could be proved, was not of a significant finding. So the scientific basis is very, very, very thin. So halacha lemaaseh, the conviction of Rav Fisher that nechleshu adoros, so that we are weaker now, it's also a very difficult idea to track, even to track in the poskim. Because on the one hand, you do find in poskim saying that we're shvacher now, we're weaker now, maybe she has certain kulas. On the other hand, you find scientists that say that we're stronger now, that we're better now, that we have better nutrition now. You find nowadays we have that women often have periods while they're nursing. So that is an indication that we are, our nutrients and our nutrition is on the increase. So that's a difficult thing to base oneself on. The point that Rav Fisher makes, that in the ninth month he would go the other direction, in other words, till the ninth month he's concerned. After the ninth month he says, all right, let the pregnancy let the baby come. So in ninth month the woman should fast, so that post will take issue with the baby for a carrot. Because if a woman is, not to say that a woman in her ninth month should eat, but to say that once a woman is, once labor is on the horizon, once a woman's going into labor, so then there's good reason to say that a woman should break her fast, because going to labor means that she will be a cholish eshba sakana shortly after. She already is a cholish eshba sakana. And again, it depends when. If a person goes to labor called nidrei night, so he's fully hydrated, she goes into labor in Kippur daytime, so then she could be weaker. And then there would be a strong reason to say that a woman going to labor after hours and hours and hours of not eating, of being dehydrated, that would make more sense for her to hydrate herself then. And that's the position, I think, of Rav Nebenzahl and his Oris to the Shulchan Aruch, that to be that punk for a carriage from a Fisher's a point, till that all along woman should ideally fast. And when she gets to the labor, so then that's a good time to break one's fast. The Moshe Sternbach in his Tshuvas, he even has a stronger criticism of Rav Fisher's position, because he points out that from the time of the Maharil apparently writes that the Maharil was aware that sometimes a woman would lose a pregnancy, but afal pikein, it was not significant enough that the numbers were not significant enough that it even came to the level of being a sofek pikuach nefesh. I saw recently, and this for me is a chiddush and has to be discussed al shulchan melachim, both amongst rabbanim and amongst the doctors and scientists, that Rav Shlomo Zalman is concerned that an early IVF pregnancy, a pregnancy that comes as a result of in vitro, that is a weaker pregnancy than a regular pregnancy. The Mishneh Berurah already records in Hilchos Tisha B'Av that the very, very early weeks of pregnancy, what has to be concerned, close to the Morik Tzia of Yaakov Emden, that one has to be concerned about the pregnancy taking them. The Mishneh Berurah records in Morik Tzia, Lagabe Tisha B'Av and other Taniyos. It's not clear exactly for how long he's worried, but it certainly would make sense to follow his position during the first few weeks of pregnancy. Would he say the same thing for Yom Kippur? So I have no indication that for Karat, he doesn't mention it in the context of Yom Kippur. But Shlomo Zalman I'm not sure the context, but he did raise his concern that a artificially conceived baby, so to speak, an IVF baby, does have a weaker early pregnancy, again, the first few weeks. And again, I saw that in the writings of Dr. Avram Sofer, he apparently, and I'm a little bit surprised with this, that's why I'm saying it and asking that that has to be further research, but he would say even in Yom Kippur, an IVF pregnancy during the first few weeks, he thinks that a woman should not fast. So again, if it's halacha l'maaseh, someone has to do more research just to make sure that I understood what he was saying correctly.
And that wouldn't be just to eat stan, that would be to eat with shiurim.
To eat with shiurim, correct. Now, so halacha l'maaseh, what do we say? So aniyus da'iti, we follow the overwhelming mainstream that a pregnant woman should fast. Nevertheless, we do have to be very careful with every single pregnancy and research the situation to make sure that the pregnancy is one that is, Baruch Hashem, healthy and comfortable and one that we would feel comfortable with the lady fasting on Yom Kippur. So what are the things that we ask? If a woman says she's pregnant, so first of all, we ask whether the woman has a history of miscarriages. If a woman has had two miscarriages, so then the skomas apoyskim is that she should not fast on Yom Kippur. Now, if those miscarriages are attributed to something that we know, not just general weakness or possible dehydration, we know she had, let's say, God forbid, she was in an accident or something, or she had some kind of machla that caused the apola, so then that would not figure into this cheshbon. But if a woman had two undiagnosed hapolis or hapolis as a result of general weakness, so then the askamas hapoiskim is that she should not, when she's pregnant, she should not fast on Yom Kippur. One may want to do, again, it's always good to ask a number of questions, find out about the previous hapolos, find out if there were some healthy pregnancies in the meantime. And that's not clear to me how that would impact the decision going forward, but it has to be discussed with Moira Hero. What happens if a woman has gone into preterm labor? She, Baruch Hashem, has healthy children. She's been pregnant several times. She's had healthy children, Baruch Hashem, but she has gone into preterm labor in the past. So the scientists say that if a woman has, once a woman has gone into preterm labor, so then there's a 15% chance that she will have preterm labor again. And if she's had preterm labor twice, then there's a 32% chance that she'll have preterm labor the third time. So that's something that has to discuss with the doctor again and find out whether this pregnant woman is at increased risk of going to preterm labor. So the doctor may say, well, if she's in the in her first trimester, she's not at increased risk. If she's in the last trimester, or if she's in the eighth month, she is at increased risk. So then, one would ask the doctor further, and if she is at increased risk going to preterm labor, what about when she's fasting? So probably the doctor will say, fasting does put a woman at some increased risk. Now, Baruch Hashem, we don't find that the Shaarei Tzedek is full of women in their first, second, even third trimester, so, but there is an increased risk. So that would be a situation where a Rav may also say that this woman should not fast and she should eat shiurim as long as the doctor is comfortable with the shiurim. What happens if a woman has, in this particular pregnancy, she's already had some labor already? So again, that's I would run it by the doctor just to be sure that one's not overreacting. That if but chances are that if a woman has had some preterm labor and it's real labor, the different kinds of labor, there's what's it called, Braxton Hicks labor, which is not painful but contractions. So most doctors understand that those kind of contractions do not, if they're not, are not indicators of going into preterm labor. There are situations where even the painless contractions, if they're very intense, and that they may be able to morph into It will be called real labor. But these are, again, the question that one has to ask the doctor involved. This particular pregnancy, if it had preterm labor, now is she at an increased risk as a result of fasting going into labor? And then, so that would be another case where in advance we may instruct a woman to have to eat bishurim. What happens if a woman dehydrated? So dehydration is always a sakonas afashas on two levels. One is because God forbid a person can fall. When they dehydrate, they can faint. And second of all, because dehydration can get out of control. Now, there was usually, for most people, they dehydrate, they drink and they're back. But sometimes a person can get into a bad cycle, and where it's hard to break the dehydration. So Shulchan Aruch says, Mishach Zei Bulmas, a person on Yom Kippur gets dehydrated, then when a person breaks their fast. What are the signs of dehydration? So, there are many, many signs. Heart palpitations is a significant sign. A person who gets very, very clammy and sweaty, that could be a sign. Person has very amber urine could be a sign. Person who gets lightheaded. So, halacha lemasa, again, derech klal, if a person becomes lightheaded and they sit down and they still are lightheaded, so that would be very concerning. And that's the kind of thing we ask the Rav of the Shul, should I break my fast? A person, and very often, levi yodei moros nafshu, a person knows himself, they know that this happens to them, and they'll be fine. Sometimes they're not sure, it's very new, so that's that kind of thing that the Chavetz Chaim was referring to, that this is, if it's Misha Ochzei Bulma's full-fledged dehydration, then there's no shayla. No one has to break one's fast. Choyli Shabom Machmas Rovain, Simonom Shein of Keyos, and Yochalira, so it begins to get, when sight begins to get cloudy. So that's certainly, or when begins to see the get very, very lightheaded. So those are very, very significant signs that everyone's fast. A person gets a little bit floozy, a little bit lightheaded. So I'm not sure what to say. As I've said, doctor, I say, it all depends on the person. Depends what their history is. Depends if it's something different than which they often have. If they sit down, it goes away. So I'm not saying either way, but that's, but if a woman has a history of dehydration, so then, again, Sarachian, you have to ask the woman, when you dehydrate, what happened? Was it that you hadn't eaten for 48 hours? Or was it that it was a very, very hot day, and you were running and running and running? It was the kind of thing that you were in a room of 300 people, and of course it wasn't enough air to breathe. So then maybe it's not an indication of being relaxed and in an air-conditioned room and comfortable, b'chule, b'chule. So, on the other hand, if a woman says, no, I was going about my business normally, I had a good night's sleep, I woke up in the morning, and so then that would be very, very concerning. I'm talking about she's pregnant, and pregnant women are at a greater risk of dehydrating. So a pregnant woman, I always ask her, is there any history of dehydration? So if she says, risk, I was in hospital for 2 days on IV, so then I don't think she should fast. Right? Again, I'd run it by the doctors, make sure not. But the woman says, I got very lightheaded the other day. So I'd ask, was that an absolutely normal day when you were fully hydrated and drinking? And or was it an unusual day? It was very, very difficult for you. So then, depending on what she answers, I would probably again discuss with her doctor to find out whether we would allow her to fast or whether she would drink shiurim or whether she would have to do more than sure. So and let's say woman has some kind of bleeding or staining. So that's also something that we have to evaluate whether that's a reason that she should not fast or not. Sometimes a woman has staining at the very beginning of her pregnancy, that is not an indication of any problem at all. But if she has staining later on in the pregnancy, that could be an indication that the pregnancy is a weaker kind of pregnancy. So again, halacha lemaaseh, a woman calls up, she's pregnant. So I would ask her these questions. Number one, is it a regular pregnancy? Does she have any history of dehydration? Is there any concerns about the pregnancy? Was she in bed rest at all? Ask many, get a full picture. Are there any indications of that from previous pregnancies? Does she have any history of staining and contractions? And then, depending on what emerges, what profile emerges, if Baruch Hashem, everything's gewaldig and wonderful, it's a great pregnancy, no dehydration, no kitchen. So then, I would say that she should fast. In the event that she says she did have certain issues, so it has to be evaluated. If she had, again, if she had two apolis undiagnosed, then if she had preterm labor before and she's now at the end of the ninth month or something, so then those are situations where we would probably tell her not to fast. And if there is histories of dehydration or of staining or of contractions, we would probably then have to speak to the doctor and find out, does the doctor see her at a greater risk than another pregnant woman? Shulchan Aruch says a regular pregnant woman fasts. But if a woman is not a regular, it's not a regular pregnancy, it's different pregnancy, so then certainly when she asks the doctor to say, is this woman at greater risk than other pregnant women? And is that risk increased, which in the answer is yes, by fasting. So, and if the doctor says that the risk is increased by fasting, so then I would ask the doctor whether shiurim would be good enough. And I would describe to the doctor that shiurim are having approximately an ounce every 9 minutes. So we can get 6 ounces into her. So that, then I'd ask the doctor, is that considered then good enough? Now usually, doctors have told me that's going to be good enough in most situations. As long as she starts early and starts hydrating herself early, usually doctors will say, I wanted to have X number of ounces over the course of a certain period of time. And usually the shiurim will satisfy that level of hydration, especially without much movement and being comfortable. Sometimes it won't, and then one has to instruct the woman to drink without shiurim. And then once she's had the shiurim, then she would, or once she's had whatever the doctor said she should fast, that she needs, then she would continue fasting. If I do instruct a woman to fast, a pregnant woman to fast in Yom Kippur, so I would always tell her, no, Baruch Hashem, everything's good. So then I would very much want her to stay home in an air-conditioned, or if it's cool like today, in a cool place, and be restful, have her husband check in on her. That's a very important hayra, that it's important to point out that the fast is the most important than the tainus. It's more important than the davening and the tainus. So if there is a way that we can preserve the fast and a woman is, or any chola, is resting at home, so then the person rests at home. That's what the Chasam Sofer points out. Even the Chasam Sofer got pushed back from his Baal Batam. They got to be in shul, right? To say Vida Malkei, not this year's Shabbos, but to be there for Kol Nidre, to be up in a Sana Tekev. How can I have you keep that Sana Tekev? So many Baal Batam will say rather more important should be in shul. So even the Chasam Sofer already had to tell his Baal Batam, no, more important, it should make the fast. It means being in bed the entire day, davening on your own, lying down, more important than the tainus. So whenever, and Shlomo Zalman says even more, Shlomo Zalman says, if a person will be able to get through the tainus having shiurim, and going to shul, they have to have one more shiur, another ounce of liquid. So Shlomo Zalman says, a person should stay home. Better to be at home than to be in shul if it means having to have an extra shear. We have questions often come up whether it is it better, let's say the doctor isn't sure. The doctor says that I don't know what it's going to be, but one of three scenarios, right? Either they'll be able to fast the entire day, or they start having shiurim from the get-go in the morning, or they wait and see what happens. But if they begin to have simanim of dehydration, so then they have to drink without shiurim as much as they need till they're better. So the Haskamas of Pesukim is the following: that if we are sure that this person is going to have to drink on Yom Kippur, so then it's better to start shiurim in the morning. If there's a sofek, maybe this person will make it through the entire day, then it's better to give it a shot, even though it might mean that one has to have non-shiurim later on. It's very important also to impress upon the Balabatim that having shiurim is a heter deiraisa. It's one of the chumras shehevli deikulois is that as people become more educated and aware that we are, that sometimes a rav will tell a chayla to have shiurim, so sometimes people think, oh, it must be that if I have shiurim, so then it's then only oimen isid rabbanon. So the whole way of looking at the tain is different. So it's very important in shiurim and in pasuk mishalas to impress upon balabatim that having shiurim is a heter and a din deiraisa. But deiraisa, someone cannot have shiurim. Shiurim is a special din of machilin akal akal. That having, since pachis mikashir is not chiv oinshin, so we see that pachis mikashir is a lighter isa than eating kashir. But pachis mikashir is also an isa deiraisa. So when the rav paskins, the rav is allowing pachas mikashir, the rav is saying, midin deiraisa, this is mutter. He's saying, this is a pikuach nefesh case. He's a resof pikuach nefesh. Hey, yois, a pikuach nefesh, or resof pikuach nefesh, so now it's mutter. Now that it's mutter to eat, so now there's a din of machil and akal akal. Now we talk, negotiate, to make it the lightest possible iser. But, the lightest possible, head to whatever you call it. But we have not moved from a deiraisa to rabbanon. We've moved a tiny, tiny gradation between a different level of deiraisa and a level of deiraisa. Sometimes people make the mistake and they think that they'll call the rabbi, so I have to fast. So, well, can I do shiurim? And the rabbis explain, you can only speak, to do shiurim, a pachas mishir, also speak koach nefesh. So if a woman calls up, and she's pregnant, and I try to take a good history of what's happening, and Baruch Hashem, this woman sounds healthy, and the pregnancy is healthy, and everything's gavaldig, and the Mishnah was speaking to her, when the Mishnah said that Mubaris Mishlimais. So then I beg the woman to stay home, and not to go to shul, because I'm also a bit nervous, that it's also an achrais, especially if it's 8th month, very, very nervous. And if it's the 8th month, I'm not pushed very hard to stay home, and explain to her that the most important thing is you should fast and come through the day without going to labor and get help with the other children. And if it means your husband has to come home also, and if it means the husband will daven less, her fasting is more important than his davening. And then I give her indications that she has to be aware of. That if she would have any kind of signs of dehydration, if she'd get lightheaded or dizzy, and it doesn't go away when she sits down. She gets dizzy because she stood up to go to the bathroom, and so then that's not a dehydration. That's a different phenomenon. And she sits down and goes away, good, then that's not a problem. But if she sits down and doesn't go away, or if she's lying down and she gets dizzy and lightheaded, so then that's a sign of dehydration. And whereas if it was any other situation, I may say, ask more questions, discuss the rub, do you ever have this before? When it comes to a pregnant woman, I would say that she should break her fast then, until she gets rid of the dizziness or faintness. It, obviously, if her eyesight, that I've never heard of happening, but obviously her eyesight begins to go. She has heart palpitations, she has to break her fast. If she gets very, very clammy, because I never had this lamaisa, and sweaty. If the urine is very, very amber, also, these are hard things to come by. But if she gets any kind of staining, she has to break her fast right away. Any kind of contractions, has to break her fast right away. Any change in contractions, break her fast right away. If there's change in fetal movement, it's very hard for a woman to monitor, but she monitors the tzad chumra and the tzad kulam. In other words, any chashash that there's any change in fetal movement, so in all those situations she has to break her fast, and in all those situations she should break her fast until this the symptom is resolved. Right? If a woman had dehydrated a day or two before Yom Kippur, and the doctor says that she's at increased risk at dehydrating Yom Kippur, and the doctor says there is no way that it's medically sound for her to fast the entire day, so then I would rather have her shiurim earlier rather than leave her so that she will have to break the fast without the shiurim later on. Okay, so any questions on the question before?
Yes. So if the situation calls for it, you have the infrastructure in place, why not just put her on an IV nutrition so she's not eating, so she's fasting?
Right.
She's not taking it, she's not ingesting food.
Right.
La halacha, she's fasting.
So do we put... should we put a person in an IV so they can fast through the day? So there are many poskim who address this, Waldenberg and Neuwirth and Moshe Feinstein, and apparently when the Rav was on in years, so he did go on IV for Yom Kippur, and I think that's what Rav Waldenberg is responding to when Rav Waldenberg says, "I heard that Chacham Echad went on IV." Now, my understanding, if I remember correctly, when the Rav had himself an IV, it was entirely for emotional reasons. And the Rav did not hold it was halachically necessary by any means at all. But he was, Yom Kippur was, when you read Halachic Man, you see that it was the emotional attachment that we often have to the various Yom Tov and Shabbosos, so the Rav had very intensely to Yom Kippur. So for him to imagine that he was not going to have a Tzom Yom Kippur was unimaginable. But Al Pidin, the person is not obligated to go on an IV if there is chashash to break the fast. Now, we should pass on the Shaila. Has to break it, doesn't to break. Has to break the fast. There's no reason to go on an IV. Right? That's what Rav Waldenberg points out, that Al Pidin, that Kadosh Baruch Hu said that this person is potter for fasting. Kadosh Baruch Hu said this person is mechuyev to eat. Kadosh Baruch Hu did not say that we should do a strategy at Tachvoros in order to make sure that the person can fast. Potter for fasting. Rav Moshe has a very interesting take on this. Rav Moshe writes, has a tshuva where somebody asked that the doctor said if they take a certain kind of a capsule on Yom Tov, not a capsule, a certain application on Yom Tov. So then that will help them fast. So Rav Moshe writes, there's no chiyuv. If you're not going to be able to make them fast, you're a chayla. So under certain situations, you're part of fasting. And then he said, and not only that, but there'll be an Easter refuah on Shabbos. There's an Easter refuah on Shabbos on Yom Tov, right? So Rav Moshe writes that a person is, you're only allowed to take a refuah in Shabbos and Yom Tov if the person is a choyle shenofal mishkov. The person is sick altogether. Rav Moshe writes, but this person, Rav Baruch Hu told this person that they should take medication, right? That they shouldn't fast. So now I want to fast, so does that make it mutter for me to take medication in Shabbos and Yom Tov? So the emphasis is that the IV can be set up before Shabbos, not in the same Shabbos, but that's how far Rav Moshe goes. Then Rav Moshe writes, Kedarka Bar Kodesh, he says, no, it's not a problem, Rav Hul. Why? Because this person will be in so much tsar if they can't fast on Yom Kippur, then that's the heter to take some kind of refuah on Yom Kippur to avoid, to be able to fast. But coming back to the question of the IV, so The haskamas of poiskim is that because Baruch Hu said there's no chiyuv to fast, I'm mechuyev to fast, and then I'm not mechuyev to find a way in which I'll be able to fast. And then to put it on Shabbos and Yom Tov would be the additional problem. Certain could be issues of even dosh because they have to make sure it's in the right spot and cause some blood to come out. But it could be a different issue before. And Dr. Sofer in his Sefer writes that even though we do IVs de rigueur, we don't think about it, but there is an increased concern of infection with IV. So he says he doesn't think. Yesh Baruch Hu says there's no need to do this. So is it right to do it when there's an increased chance of sepsis? There could be situations where Rav really has a sofek. He does not have call the shots. Or there could be a situation where the Rav knows that it's the person's a fast and the person is very, very has a hard time accepting it. The doctor says the doctor is not evidence based and sees no reason why the person should fast. It's often what a doctor says. No reason. Why should you fast? And why should I run the risk of malpractice? Why should something happens and then you'll come after me and then my premiums go through the roof? So, Malu Tzarazu, you eat Yom Kippur, right? So sometimes we might be afraid they were not getting good medical information. So there could be situations where Rav is totally misupik, so maybe we'll go down that road. But it'll be it's very, very rare. Usually you call the shots, Osir Mutter, Eva Sofek, Sofek Kuch Nefesh, so then we make them. Right? But that's usually the Mahalach. Yeah. Good.
If you don't mind, would you explaining in the nature of shiurim, the yomtov?
Yeah. So shiurim are. So now we just. Well, let's just. Will we finish pregnant women? Yeah. Okay. So let's discuss. Just parenthetically, this is everything we discussed is true from the beginning of pregnancy till labor. Even during the first 40 days, even though during the first 40 days sometimes Rabbanim are more lenient when it comes to terminating pregnancies, but when it comes to Chilul Shabbos, when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh, Bechlal, and Yom Kippur as well, so we do not distinguish between the... the beginning of the pregnancy and later on. Right. Good. So shiurim. So whenever a Rav has to paskin that a person should eat on Yom Kippur. So, in other words, there's a situation where a person will, if they fast, they run the risk of being in a pikuach nefesh, in a life-threatening situation, or they run the risk of worsening a present situation ad kerikach, that they maybe come into a sovik pikuach nefesh. So then, the halach is machilin akala kal koidim, that we always try to minimize the offense, make it a little bit lighter. So what can we do over here? So the Shonim say, we will instruct people to eat pochis mikashir. Pochis mikashir is an isa deraisa. But it's not an isa deraisa with the chiyav oinshe. So stam alav. All right. So, what shiurim do we advocate? So, when it comes to solids and liquids, Shulchan Aruch says solids are, I think, 2/3 of a regular size egg. All right. So it's hard to tell people what to mishar exactly. So I tell people a cubic inch because that's well below 2/3 of an egg. Or to mishar, to think in their minds a large, large sugar cube. To have that in mind. Not to sit there with tape measures or with different kinds of measuring instruments. Mishar in their own mind, does this look like, looks like a large grape? Okay, we're in the zone. It looks like less than half an egg? We're in the zone. Pima Mishar, like a very, very thick, large date. That's the shear of the solids. The shear of liquids is, again, halacha l'masa, we probably go with about a revius, even though there's machlokes as to whether it's chatzi lugma, whether it's one cheekful, and it's depending on the person's size, or whether it's more of an average cheekful, it's machlokes. Mechaber seems to pass and go per person. Mishnah Berurah quotes that there are other Rishonim who Say otherwise, he goes, Askamas, the Paiskim is a standardized form, and the proximate Revius, which is approximately, not a Revius, which is Malilugmav, which, again, the somewhere around a fluid ounce, somewhere above take a small shot glass. So a person who is ill can have like a solid the size of, let's say, a large grape, and a liquid the size of a shot glass. And if they need, if the doctor says all they need is hydration, they just have the liquid. If they need both, then they can have both, and they should give themselves about 9 minutes between the end of one of eating one and the beginning of the next, right? Because otherwise it becomes mutsuruf.
Is that liquid and solid, or just two solids? 9 minutes.
So you can have both the liquid and solids, and not mitzarif. So you can have both a sugar cube's worth of solid and a shot glass's worth of liquid, excuse me, within the same 12 minutes. But you cannot have another solid or another liquid within the 12 minutes, because that would become mitzuruf. And you go ahead?
12 or 9.
Say 9 minutes. What did I say? Nine. Said 9 minutes. Chassam service is 9 minutes. That's what you work with. So it's sorry. So 9 minutes, and there are other shurim. There are, I think, Rav Chaim Volozhiner had the Yitzchok Chanan had 5 minutes, and the Alter Rebbe I think has 7 minutes, and the Chashulchan has 6 minutes. So I always start with the Chassam service 9 minutes. There's somebody thinking of 2 minutes, and then I tell people that if you have to have shiurim, so have a first find out what they need to have. If the doctor says only liquids, right? And the machlokas are poskim whether they should dafka have clear liquids or full caloric liquids. So Lanius Daiti, I think that that's common to poskim is that you can have, once you have any liquids, you can have a caloric liquid. So I would say take an ounce of a Powerade or a Gatorade every 9 minutes. The doctor says you need to have a salt as well. Take a grape or a grape size or something every 9 minutes until you're in the clear. The doctor will tell you how much you have to have. If a person, if a woman is having some kind of, if anybody has some kind of lightheadedness, let's say it's palpitations, so one drinks and the palpitations go once they go. So the doctor says you need to have a little bit more. A little bit more. If he doesn't say that, so then you're good. You stop, and then you go back to fasting.
Are we seeing that the large sugar cube, or the large grape, is Kikosetis agasta?
It's less
than that.
It's probably less than Kikosetis agasta. Yeah, probably
a little bit less. Kikosetis agasta is the shear, right?
Yeah,
than that.
Shulchan Aruch says Kikosetis agasta, and the Shulchan Aruch puts it in terms of a beya, either half a beya or 2/3 of a beya. Yeah.
In practice, do you ask her doctor, or do you ask a doctor advisor in your own shul?
So I prefer to speak to the doctor of the person themselves, because they have the most intimate information. In the event that the doctor doesn't, and many doctors are, I say most, are very willing to talk, there are situations where a person calls up on an Erev Yom Kippur. So I'm not going to be able to get through to their doctor, or their doctor is traveling, or their doctor doesn't have the patient speak to rabbis. So, or the doctor speaks to the rabbi and you see that he's just that he's not addressing this particular pregnancy, or he's not evidence based. So then I would speak to doctors that are of great reputation, and that give me the time of day, and then I trust. But I would never reveal their names to any of my balabatim. In other words, I would protect the doctor as well. He's talking to me about a situation presenting to him. So I would not say I spoke to this doctor and they said, because I can't expose them to malpractice. So I have to protect them. Good. So we're good on the shiurim? Yeah. Okay. Good. So what else should we discuss? You know, practically speaking, one of the sometimes you have to convince a bala boss to. It's also part of the job. Part of the job of being a rav is to tell the people when they have to fast, and here's a major change. It's in Klal Yisrael. In other words, when the rabbanim when I was a kid said they got very few of these shilas, because there's le'eladaya, a European Jew. Would be wouldn't think of eating Yom Kippur. I mean, it may not have been able to read the Gemara, Rashi Tosfos, but not the fasting Yom Kippur. I may even have worked in Shabbos, not the fasting Yom Kippur. I had a European woman in my community who was Baruch Hashem, she was a wonderful lady, but there were times in her life when it wasn't so easy for her to keep mitzvahs, but fast, and when she was al eres dvoi. She would not, and I would come to her and I'd say, no, you have to eat this Yom Kippur. She said, I was crazy, eating Yom Kippur. It's not Eilal Data, right? And we have young people, Baruch Hashem, they might go to yeshiva, they learn Pekuach Nefesh, Deich HaShabbos, Deich Yom Kippur. So then, and many people get very, very nervous, and people, Bechlal, there's much more stress around these days than there used to be. They're much more anxious nowadays. So people are also much more, Chazal say they're al bol al guf, right? That's one of the reasons why Chazal assered medication, because Jews are very, very nervous about health issues. So you put all this together, well educated, they know there's such a thing as shiurim, they know that the doctors, you know, is not taking a charias for this. So then we get all sorts of questions that Pusimon didn't get. You have to take everything very, very, each one on its own, everyone's independently, seriously. Shuts it up, maybe shower each one. And then in the event that you feel that the person should break the fast, you have to encourage them to break the fast. And in the event that you feel that they have to fast, then you have to encourage them very strongly to stay at home. If they push hard that they want to come to shul, so I tell them, so come kol nidre. As long as you don't have a 10-2-hour walk back. If you have a 10-minute walk back, so kol nidre, you're fully hydrated. All right. I tell them then, if you're feeling great, mama's feeling great, not just good, feeling great. You want to come to Ne'ilah. But you have to bring drinks with you. That's pas pasale. Because if you know there's a drink waiting for you in the coat room, they're going to make it through, it won't be a problem. So then, and just practically, they have to bring pas pasale. So, it's all part of the malacha. Now, so what about a woman who is who's made nekes, a nursing mother? It also comes up nowadays. So a nursing mother has to monitor two things. First, she's healthy, she's nursing, everything's fine, it's gvaldik. So she has to monitor her health and the baby's health. Now, as a nursing mother is at greater risk of becoming dehydrated because she's putting out the liquids. So she monitors herself more carefully than a regular woman. And again, I give her all the simanim of dehydration. What about the baby? So the baby begins to, the baby's not going to get so much. So nowadays I would say, I think Haskamas HaPoiskim is, we tell the mother that let's say the baby's not getting enough, so now begin to supplement. Begin to give formula, right? And get the baby through the formula. Okay, so then everything will be good. The mother will be good. The baby will be good. There, what happens is the mother says, but I never gave my baby formula. So if it's Sai, then I think you have to Lania's daiti, you have to push a little bit and say, right, but this is the time and you're going to use formula. Right? So that's what it's for. To try to get through the Yom Kippur. That's Lania's deity. There is an alleged view of the Chazon Ish, which is not well documented, and those who are close believe that it's incorrect. That the Chazon Ish held that Shinei Me'ayim Legabe Tinek is a Sakona. Because the Gemara that seems to indicate that. that if we change the diet of a baby and the baby doesn't get Gemara Yevamos says that stam tinek masuka neitzel cholov. So the Chazanish allegedly said that if a baby never had formula, so then that's a safek sakana to change the baby over to formula. All right, so that is a very controversial position on two levels. Number one, did the poskim of the mekabel the Chazanish? See, Pesach said that's not pshat in the Gemara. The Gemara said was talking about a tinok that was already malnourished. So a tinok who's malnourished is musukin, so it's al cholov. But tinok whom we're offering formula to is not musukin, it's al cholov. And the Chofetz Chaim seems to already have preempted the Chazon Ish by saying this is talking about the Be'er Halacha, talks about a woman, a tinok who is b'sakana, not a tinok who is not getting what they need to get today. A tinok who is b'sakana ready, so then they don't get their milk, and then there could be a concern. So again, in the Sefer Torah HaYoledes, from Zilberstein also, he's a B'nai Braka, so he did his research apparently amongst the chevra, the close to the Chazanish, and he says that Chazanish is referring to a baby who was very, very sensitive and didn't digest food well. So that could be, if we know that a baby doesn't take formula, it's something else. The mother tried and the baby spits it up, all right? So then this baby's dependent on this mother, this mother doesn't have it, so it's a sakana for the baby, for sure. No question about that. But if the parents have not tried formula, or if they're uncomfortable with formula, so then, again, we would encourage the mother to freeze milk in advance if she has, and to use form if she can. At the end of the day, if the baby's not going to take anything but the mother, the baby's masukin, if the baby's not going to get enough milk, no question. Sometimes the woman says, if I don't give milk for the entire day, I may lose my milk supply. So it does happen, but I don't think it's grounds for fasting in Yom Kippur. I did have that once, and it was very, very upsetting. I don't remember if it was a Tishma B'Yom Kippur, where when I checked in afterward, the woman did lose her milk supply. It wasn't at the very beginning of nursing, it was later on. And it's very upsetting. I'm a naturalist. I'm very much in favor of nursing. And the doctors say it's very, very important for the baby, and it's important for the bonding of the baby. I believe in all these things. But I told the mother that even if I had known in advance that this was going to happen, I still would have told you that you have to fast in Yom Kippur. Because there's no pikuach nefesh in this case. It's correct. I mean, maybe this is a issue, but I think that's correct. The woman is who asks these questions are not, it's not that they what they're saying is real. It does happen. It happens very, very rarely nowadays. Very rare. Usually, overwhelmingly, if Motsoy Yom Kippur, Motsoy Tisha, a woman starts drinking, she will get her milk supply back. But I'm not saying she's wrong. Can I? Go ahead.
Why don't we treat formula the same way we treat
IV? Because question, not a bad question, but because it's seen as a very, very normal form of nutrition. In other words, it's not seen nowadays. The vast majority of babies do get some kind supplement with formula, so I don't think it's seen as a. It's not seen as a refuah. Not bad, kasha. To think it up, but I think that's the answer. I think it's still seen as a normal form of hazana. I think so.
So perhaps we should say let her nurse, and if
surely,
she gets,
certainly culturally, that's for sure correct. Good idea.
So let's. What can we instruct her to nurse if she feels so strongly about it? Let her nurse, and then if she feels she'll get lightheaded, of course, and then she'll eat.
She should nurse in Yom Kippur. Yeah.
So then, because once you get lightheaded, you're
not there. Yeah, that's not. I mean, what you're saying is technically may happen, but halacha l'maaseh, most nursing mothers don't. Doesn't happen to most nursing mothers. They don't dehydrate. Most lose their milk, but they don't dehydrate. But what you're saying is correct. That can happen. Yeah. Go ahead.
Just to clarify, so a woman who's in labor is considered to be a chola, she's about
Emenekes, Emenekes during the first 30 days is potter from fasting on the Taniyos. I believe Tishbav, I have to look it up again. I believe Tishbav as well, but not in Yom Kippur.
Okay, so that doesn't factor into Yom Kippur.
Right, again, let's separate things. Emenekes is potter from fasting. Everything but Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, and there's a minhag that you should try to fast. All right, so on a yeledes during the first 30 days, even if she's not nursing, is a chaya, is potter from fasting on all the taniyos, I believe, except for Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. Yeah, a yeledes on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av during the first 3 days is Ptura from fasting. Alright? So Machleg is with those 3 days are may Eis La'Eis, or whether they're halachic days. Shulchan Aruch passes halachic days, which means that if she gives birth on 10 minutes before Shkia, 2 days before Yom Kippur, she only has, that's her day. But Mishneh Berurah quotes that it seems to be noted to be makel that we can use me'ei slice, right? Which could come out, and this is machlok supposed, whether we follow this, it could come out that she could eat kol nidrei night and start fasting after that. Shlomo Zalman raises the question whether that's talking what we do, or do we say, no, so that's a bizarre thing, and she, in that case, if she knows it'll be awesome, then she should start earlier, machlok supposed. And during the first 3 days, we tell her that she has to drink and eat, right? If the doctor says, if the woman says that she thinks she can do shiurim, and the doctor agrees, we would allow that. If a woman says she wants to fast in the first 3 days, and the doctor is not against it, so then there's a machlok supposed whether we allow it, right? From the day 3 to 7, then a woman should fast, unless she says trichani, the doctors insist on it, depending on the situation. And after that, then she's like any other woman. All right. That's for your lettuce. Good. So we did a lettuce. We did what about a C-section? A C-section is the same thing as. Same din as a yeledes. The only thing is that because she's gone through surgery, so then the surgery may have a different metzias. There, a person with a miscarriage, so machleik is achronim, if she's like a yeledes or like a regular choyla. Does she have the halachas of 3 and 7? Rabbi Yosef quotes it, I believe he's Mekel. If Emapelas during the first 40 days is like any other chayla, I think. One of the questions we get nowadays, a very common question, two common questions. One is, what about a chola she'ein basakon? That's the fast. What about cholish shame is going to need to take medication? So one of the things that I try to do around now is to send a note to the Balabatim that if they're on any medication, if it's a once-a-day medication, then they should begin to discuss with their doctors whether they can take it before Shki and after Tzeis. So that might mean changing the timing of the medication, but if you start working on it now, then by the time you get to Yom Kippur, you can often make a good change by then. Some doctors will be... I've never met a doctor against it, but it could be certain situations that are so time-specific that it can't be done. So that's what happens if a person takes medication, but is not in a cholish yesh bo sakana. Without the medication, the doctor says it's going to interrupt the protocol. The doctor said, or the person will be in a lot of pain, but not a cholim mesukan. But let's say they want to take medication, they get terrible, terrible headaches, migraines. They're not masukin at all, but a lot of pain. What about if a woman is on birth control and if she skips a day, or even if she takes it a few days later, she can end up having staining, right? What happens if a person is on some kind of anxiety medication, and if they don't take it at the right time, then they'll become very, very anxious, right? They're not saying they're going to. Not talking about a person who's on an antidepressant, and that could be a chilum sukkah already if they become depressed, but not going to become. But they'll become very anxious. So, another person. This is a very common question. A young person who's on some kind of focusing medication. And if they don't take the medication, they're not going to be able to sit through shul at all. They'll be all over the place. Right? So, and there's an emotional part to that. Number one, they're already teenagers. Right? All their friends are sitting in shul. Right? And then they'll also get upset with themselves. They're not going to daven properly in Yom Kippur. So in all of these situations, the halacha is that if a person takes a pill without any liquid, so that is, we would say it's mutter. It's not ochel. It's a Rav Shechter just said, it's like swallowing a stone. It's not food. Others say it's not derech achila. It's not something that needs a day raisa. Maybe shalok derech achila is a derabbanan. Rav Shechter knows not even that, because it's not food. All right, so that's the easy answer. What happens if they can't take it without water? So that's a problem already, because then the water is going to break the tinus. So in some of these situations, one would suggest taking it with the minimal amount of water. Where the water is pogum, so it's not roy, not a normal drink. It doesn't mean it has to be mamish vile. It doesn't mean that. No, it means it shouldn't be a thing that you normally would drink. It has to have a little bit. If Shlomo Zalman says put a little bit of dish soap inside of it, right? It's not going to be. It's not vile, but it's. Some suggest put a little bit of mouthwashing inside. All right. In all of these situations, you always tell the person to experiment before Yom Kippur, right? Number one, experiment before Yom Kippur whether you can take a pill without water, right? Because you don't want it to get stuck on Yom Kippur, right? You know, and if you're going to, and also experiment with the whatever concoction you're going to use, because you don't want to have a concoction and then have a vile taste throughout Yom Kippur. So tell the person, figure it out before Yom Kippur, a few days before, when there's a solution, you can do something, you can. But then comes Yom Kippur. This could be an approach in some of these situations, so that they'll be able to get through the. They'll have the medication and they'll be comfortable and they're good. And it's not a frivolous situation. They talk and need to have this. There is a, we'll finish with this. In yeshivas, the sheet of Rav Chaim is very often quoted. Rav Chaim is often quoted as saying that a chayla mesukin doesn't have shiurim. A chayla mesukin has no tainus, mutter to eat. So where does shiurim come from? So the Rav Chaim is quoted as saying that he would tell any person who has to eat in Yom Kippur, eats in Yom Kippur. Everybody says, how you talking? Like Rav Chaim says, it goes against the Mishnah, Mechila Nakal Akal. So, the Brisker Rav said that the Rav Chaim made the following distinction. Rav Chaim held that if a person was healthy, and the fast may make them into a chayla mesukan, that's when we say that they have to eat akal akal. But if a person comes into Yom Kippur and they're already mesukan, so then Rav Chaim thought that since the Magid Mishnah writes that kol tzaracha bar mutter for a chodesh yesh b'sakana, so having a norm, not being forced to eat poches mikashir should be like kol tzaracha. Halacha l'maisa, I'm not aware of poskim that asoymich on this. Eating shurim is very, very difficult. And eating shurim could mean that a person may end up being in shul, certainly for large chunks of time. It's very hard. Many people would rather be uncomfortable than sit with a clock and every 9 minutes take a shot glass of some kind of liquid. So, but I'm not aware of postcomers who are lemaisa semechan and Rav Chaim. Even following the hezbeh of the Brisker Rav, the Be'er Halacha holds that we're not semech on the Magid Mishnah. We're only semech mamish if it's lachzikil or mananoi that we say kol tzaracha. Achrayus would not come under this category. Rosh Shturmach has a different Mahalach in Rav Chaim. Not that much different. He holds that a little bit different than Brisker Rav. If a person would get sicker, then they should. Then Rav Chaim thought that they should eat as much as they want. But if a person, that was a little bit different nusach than Brisker Rav. Not that much different. A little bit different. Okay. Any questions? Glenn?
What was the reason we allow women from birth control? The standing is like a kavanah, or was the
no.
What was the issue that she shouldn't miss it?
The issue is that if a woman, sometimes a woman starts staining, then that means that they have to be Purish. She never reads dam. So lechayra. I might be wrong about this, but my thinking is that we define a chayla she'ein basakana as anybody who doesn't, as a situation where you cannot function normally. That's a chayla she'ein basakana. Nafal lemishkav. Choshochan says he can't function normally. Rosh Hashanah says it. So if a person, if you have a couple, and she's going to end up staining, so now should they become also to each other, l'chara, that means that the issue is not functioning normally. So that's why I would say it's in the same category. So I wouldn't be matir chila because of it, but to be matir a pill, which is shaloi kederech and not food.
What if she knows that if she missed before and she didn't?
No, so then I would say not. No. And then why
she
should?
The
person then knows that when she takes the pill at a different lechara, which she can do is take it before shkiyin after tzeis. For most people, that's going to work. It's going to be the difference of an hour. But if a woman says, I know when I've taken my pill an hour late, an hour different, so then I start staining, so then I think it's a serious thing.
Maybe say that emotional sorrow would play a role there?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Right. In terms of, they can also make a person get so anxious that they can't be metafkin properly. Yeah. Yeah.
We'll try to make a meeting downstairs.
Good. Okay, excellent.
Thanks, everyone.